We are falling, falling.
We're soaring, no longer flying. There are so many stars in heaven that we can no longer reach. And we're dying. Oh, we're breaking free.
Breaking free.
We're breaking. Oh, no, no.
Did I tell you guys that I do have students that unironically sing that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's come full circle with the musical, the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's a song from High School Musical. And now Disney Plus has one of the first original contents they created was High School Musical, the series. And it is a series about a high school that puts on a production of High School Musical.
Wait, yeah. That's the premise?
Mm-hmm. And it's the original. My. It's in their canon. It is the high school where they filmed the original High School Musical films. The actual high school where that happened, kids go there and they're like, this is where they filmed that movie. And now we're going to put on the first production of the musical of that movie here.
This is,
oh boy.
Intellectual property rights need to be abolished because otherwise Disney is going to become more and more self-referential. Mm-hmm. You've seen Descendants. You've seen
Descendants.
I mean, they are collapsing in on themselves like a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Hugo is rolling over in his grave right now.
Oh, it's going to get naughty. It has to be destroyed.
Well, you know, they are the sole reason that copyright law keeps extending to protect the mouse.
Yep.
It is the same monster. I mean, truly, if and when we do the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen season, I think it... Unironically, the enemy will be like the manifested universe of Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to play someone who works for a party company and can only be referred to as Snow Princess for the entire season.
So welcome back, everybody. We just had some wild shit. I'm telling you, the first time ever in Bits Before Crits history, Nick said something that he requested us remove from the podcast. You can let your little minds wonder what could be so truly twisted that Mayfield himself doesn't want it on pod. But you'll never know unless you subscribe to our secret. Don't give me those looks. Come on. So we're picking up again. I'm Dean Beckwith. I'm here with some of my frenemies.
I'm Maureen Fenninger.
I'm Nick Mayfield.
I'm Stephanie Ward.
And I'm Michael Gilbert.
The season is called Rising, but unfortunately we are falling right now. Falling at a rapid speed as the lantern ship catches flame, the flames licking the bare toes of our lovely Twinks, Carl, and Damien. The fire spreading across the deck of the ship, the bottom of the ship punctured as we fall through the air. This is going to be very straightforward. There will be three rounds before you hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The decisions that you make in those three rounds will determine who, if anyone, survives this fall. The lives of all the spirits.
Every NPCs.
Yourself and the greatest NPCs that Dean has ever created are all at risk here.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
The ship itself, is it slanted now as it plummets to the ground?
It is slanted as it plummets.
Could you, placement-wise, describe where people are in the slant, as in who's closer to an edge, who is, as you described, toes are licking flames.
Yeah, so our good boys, Carl and Damien, are up on the ropes.
Mm-hmm. At the highest altitude currently.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say that everyone is, now that he is gone, now that Edrigal has disappeared, everyone who was kind of knocked unconscious is stirring a little bit. Most of them are scattered across the deck. The only one who is close to an edge and leaning on the edge as he swirls his glass of shingle malt is Salazar. And then the other two named NPCs are up top. Kent, we'll start with you. You look up from the pile of shattered eggs into that hole where you just saw Edrigal drop, and you see through that hole the whistling wind and the ground slowly rising up, and you hear... When I say rounds, I don't mean 15 seconds. I mean, we can luxuriate in a little comedy before my best characters die. So you hear a light sobbing. Oh, Papa Eggman, He said, ne'er cry o'er the cracked eggs. Oh, but it's hard, Kent.
We're all going to be cracked eggs, Eggman, if we don't move now. And I immediately scoop him in one of my giant arms and run back up to the top and start shouting to Salazar and the soldiers to abandon ship, get in the buckets as fast as possible.
Oh, I feel like a young lad in me Papa Eggman's arms again. Oh.
I'm going to ignore that and continue to try to save people.
What are the eggs like in? Like, my imagination right now, all I see is that middle school project where you have to, like, make an egg and a parachute and the egg has to survive, you know, when you drop it with the parachute on it. So, like, are they in anything that could soften a landing or protect the eggs?
I would say the eggs are... they're transported in these cases. And in episode one, Kent said that he had layers of fabric that he wrapped them in.
Mm-hmm.
And we know also canonically that the Wustians have the highest quality, softest, high thread count fabric.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say that they've got like these huge, and 1/3 of your calories for a 6-week round trip journey were going to be eggs. So you've got a lot of eggs wrapped in this really spongy fabric, arranged like they would be in egg cartons, but hundreds and hundreds.
Thelvia, are you thinking what I'm thinking? I mean, Thelvia, are you thinking what I'm thinking? I say as we're propelling through the sky.
Well, I was thinking about fashioning parachutes, but then I remembered that there's two unconscious people up here, so maybe we should get them first.
Oh, you're talking about Damien and Carl?
Yes.
Great!
Save me, Justerlio!
I will say I'm bleeding a lot, so maybe you should climb and go and get them.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Hey, can you work on fashioning some parachutes? Because that was generally the idea I was going with. And I think if you could work on that, I could do this thing. Does that sound good?
Great. Absolutely.
Great. So there,
I'm going to try to make some parachutes really fast.
Okay. So we've got some high thread count fabric. The question is, how are you going to secure that fabric to the people?
I'm going to just tie it onto their clothing, like the corner of the sheets, just wrap it under, like through their sleeves. And
like
make
flying
it...
squirrels.
Yeah.
Oh, the classic cartoon parachute where all you require is a single bed sheet with the two things tucked in the side.
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, it might not work, but we're crashing and the fabric hasn't burned yet, so.
That's reasonable because this ship is carrying a lot more than a hot air balloon from planet Earth could.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because this fabric is, you know, maybe supernaturally strong, supernaturally light. That might be possible. You know, I said you have 3 rounds. The actual fashioning of the parachutes, whomst is going to get a parachute? We have maybe 16 soldiers, I think. We started with 12 and then we rescued 4 more, as well as, of course, you all and Salazar. Is there someone you want to prioritize?
I'm putting one on myself first because always secure your own air mask before helping others. Mm-hmm. And then basically whoever can get to me soonest and the most people that can get to near where I am since I'm near where the fabrics are. So I will call out and say, hey, if you would like a parachute, I would assuage you to come to me as swiftly as possible. Also, I apologize for jumping the fire upon the deck of the ship. It wasn't quite my fault, but we'll deal with that later.
Okay, and you are now below decks. So you've hurried below decks to where, I mean, there's the hole through which you're screaming to the above decks, but that's where all the shattered eggs and the fabric protecting said eggs is.
So Carl and Damien, are they still clinging to the outside of the balloon?
Yes, yes.
Great. How high up are they?
I think we said maybe 30 feet before.
They're 30 feet up? Great. Whilst still wearing this cloak, Harlequinius would like to climb up the side of the ship, up the side of the balloon.
Yeah, and there is a network of ropes there that they climbed up.
Mm-hmm.
So you could definitely do that. You want to go up there and do what?
I want to go up there and grab both of them into my arms, and then I would like the puss to extend my cloak into my own parachute, saving Carl and Damien and allowing us to float off the ship first.
All 3 of you.
Yeah.
Legendary. Wow. Honestly, if he rolls successfully and the rest of you die, we'll sit down for the final 2 episodes together.
They asked me for help first. And also, I think we agree that this is just kind of, I'm kind of the only one who could probably get up here. Others will die doing so.
All right.
And these are the least transphobic NPCs.
True. Oh, well, unless
not Damien's a little trans exclusionary.
Yeah, but he's like 3 out of 4.
Is he trans exclusionary? I thought he was just into MILFs.
He said something a few episodes ago about Carl that was a little derogatory.
Yeah, he kind of like doesn't get the whole trans thing, but I feel kind of like a dick for killing both of them. Yeah, I feel like I'm going to give him a chance to say he's growing, but I'm definitely prioritizing Carl. He
definitely bonded over Kent's delicious udon noodles.
I thought you were going to say you bonded over Kent's delicious ass.
I mean, it is really nice. He should wear his armor less and wear that chef uniform with the assless chaps more.
I didn't even know he had assless chaps.
Well, they're not. They're just very, very, it's a very, very tight pantaloon.
Oh, so you're just looking hard at my brother's ass?
And the fabric is, you know, it's not like Wischen fabric. It's not really well made. It's pretty thin, so you can see the curvature and even the fleshy tones.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm going to roll.
That is finesse for you.
I'm using luck because that was a 3.
To summarize, every time Nick has used luck, I believe the number has gone down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just making sure.
He used it twice.
That's a 9. Ooh. That's a 9. That was a rolling a 6 and a 1. Mm-hmm. But that's a 7 plus my 2, so that is a 9.
You are able to get up there, hook each one under an arm, and you leap off. As soon as you leap up, your parachute catches, and the ship falls in front of you. And you are falling behind, weighed down pretty heavily by these people. We'll get to the consequence in a minute. Sylvia, I will say that Shalishar is one of the first ones to you.
Great.
Well,
I would like to yell out, since I have spoken with spirits many times and can communicate with them, I would like to let all spirits in the area know, loudly as I can, that we have lots of eggs. And if there's any soft little round squirrely boys who want some eggs, to come get them, and we'll let them have them if they help us get off the ship. We know they're really good at climbing and they're soft.
Oh, baby.
Oh, baby. Good one.
Do you want to aid, Maureen?
No, I'm taking this moment in where something so totally out of left field has smacked you.
Roll charisma.
As it has with all of us.
Mm-hmm. Roll charisma.
An 8.
Okay. As you are hurtling towards the trees, you hear what seems to be a rustling. We will catch up with that.
Based on the fact that we're falling very fast, and being as I saw where Edrigal left, I kind of got a good look at where the ship may plummet towards. What I would like to try and do is, I know that I think we're still in the same scene, so Elbio probably can't help me with this, but what I'd like to do is try to grasp onto as much of what's left of the cylindrical sails and try to anchor myself to see if we can turn the ship to crash into where perhaps it is the least likely to do, like the minimal damage to the ship, like maybe into a larger gathering of trees, and kind of use himself as an anchor to steer the ship's plummet.
Nice. I like that a lot. That would be a physique roll. I'll let you do it, even though you don't have experience on this ship, because I think the gentlemen who are and ladies and non-binary soldiers are getting up and are willing to help you with this and direct you. So this will just be a measure of your strength, pulling single-handedly like Superman.
I feel like I see him like wrapping some of it around his waist, and he's just like taut himself, like the guy who's at the end of a tug of war.
Mm, he is taut. You see the muscles bulging. Oh, what gorgeous lower abdomen.
That is a 9.
Okay, we're getting a lot of partial successes. Gruama.
So a few questions. Where is Etrigal at this moment? Is he still under the ship?
He is under the ship, but the ship is also traveling. The ship was always traveling horizontally as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much plummeting straight down. It's plummeting, as Kent was describing, it's moving sideways as well as it's going down.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to redirect it towards the nearest trees. So you're a little farther from where Edrigal dropped.
Okay. I have 2 spirits out of my jumpsuit right now. So both Danner and Blotson. I would like both of them to carry me up, up, and away.
And we know they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we know they can do that. So if you don't want to do anything else, I think you can get that for free.
Okay. And I am going to go after Etrigal.
Alone?
Yeah.
All righty.
I do have a bird's eye view of the ship, question mark?
You have a bird's eye view of what's happening. I will say, yeah, you are falling faster now that all three of you are held by the thing. Yes, Harlequinius sees Gru rise up and begin flying in that direction. What would you like to do, Harlequinius? This is now round two.
I would like to, if I can, adjust our trajectory towards Gru.
I would love for the party to, at the very most, split into two groups.
Yeah.
At the very most. No yeah. more solo adventures.
I'm coming, Grandmama!
So I'm going to give that to you.
You're not giving me a chance to fail on it, and I like it.
Yeah, you will redirect in that direction.
Yeah.
So you, Gru, you do hear Arlequilinius a little above and behind you, and plummeting pretty fast, rapidly towards you.
Na 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 na.
Sylvia.
Monkey puss.
What a camera shot.
Sylvia, you have hooked up our good friend Salazar and, in this period of time, and three others. This is the second round. What would you like to do?
How close does the rustling sound? Can I see any little guys coming to help?
You can see, when you peer out through the hole in the bottom of the ship, across the green treetops, you see from all around little brown-red dots coming together, converging from far and wide. How did they hear you? One doesn't know. Maybe that's worth interrogating at a later date, the fact that you have the Attack on Titan scream. But they are coming. You see lots of orange and red dots coming. I can't wait. I remember both you and Nick have negatives that I still have to give. And Kent as well. You each got a partial success. Great, 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 great. So you've identified that, and it looks like Kent has pushed it in that direction as well, and these two things are going to converge. Kent, what else would you like to do?
Can I say something else before?
Yes, you can, yeah.
It skips. Okay, I want to, since they can all hear me, I would like to clutch the spirit egg to my chest and tell them that if they get everyone off the ship safely, that they can have a very special egg. But only if they get everyone off safely.
You're saying this to the man who is currently lying like a slumbering child in the arms of Buff Warden Kent as he redirects the sails?
No, I'm saying this to the little guys coming over, all the little egg wanners.
Okay, so you Titan scream that out, but I don't even think we need to roll it. If they heard it down below, a couple hundred feet down,
ooh.
What was exactly what you said? If you help everyone get off?
If everybody gets off the ship safely, they can have this.
Immediately teleports from the embrace of Warden Kent by your side, has a completely fashioned parachute in hand, and hooks it on the nearest person.
Oh, I be wanting that egg. Oh, that I do. I'll help save them all.
And you are now moving at more than double the speed you did before. So there's about a dozen people left. Okay, Kent.
So I would like to call to Elbio because I haven't felt his connection and I've sort of cooled off from the rage. And I would like to yell to him to get to Sylvia and save himself. And I'm going to beg him to make sure he gets to safety as I try to steer the ship to the trees.
Now, your thing was end of scene consequence?
Correct. That's why I'm just screaming to him.
I wonder if I'm cheating on your behalf if I say that it's now a new scene.
I feel it's the same scene until we're no longer falling.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Even though it's a new episode. Okay, I just wanted confirmation.
I think narratively, we should restore health within this episode, perhaps.
Oh, yeah, soon. Yeah, well, as soon as you take the
but we're still finishing the consequences from last episode. I think that's fair.
All right, Kent, Moxie. Because it won't be automatic.
That is a 10.
Oh, baby.
Oh, baby, do you know what that's worth?
Yes.
Wow, you get a little something extra. He snaps out of whatever trance he was in, comes over, nuzzles his head against you, in fact, pushing you a little bit. You are straining, trying to get the right direction, but that pressure of his head helps tip those sails a little better so that down below, Sylvia can see what is rapidly becoming not a green tree, but a brown and red tree. And no, this ain't fall. This ain't fall, baby. And then, after nuzzling against you and giving you one big lick on the face, he lubba, 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 over to where Professor Daniel J. Eggman Esquire and Sylvia are doing the last of the parachutes. We are now in the final round. Sylvia, down below, you can start to make out the individuals. There shouldn't be this many of them. It's inconceivable. There's a whole copse of trees that you're headed straight for that are covered with thousands of these little fiery raccoon dog lemur things. And they are all looking up expectantly. And in fact, we'll cut away for a moment to them. We'll look up at you, the flaming ship, the disc of wood, and the rapidly burning sails hurtling down towards them. And you see all their thousands of cute faces and their big eyes looking up at you, unblinking.
Does one have a crossbow bolt on his tummy?
Oh, God, there it is.
The one who got impaled.
Yeah.
The one that we impaled. The one that Danny Eggman himself impaled.
Yep.
Yes, yes. One of the ones in the front has a crossbow bolt.
Oh, yeah. He's now in a position of authority.
Proudly through its tummy.
I would like to encourage them to run on the ship and get the people and the eggs off the ship before it's too late and we all die in a fiery blaze.
You're still maybe 50 feet from the trees. They can't leap that far, but they are all mustered there, waiting to try to do what you told them to. Given the speed at which you've been moving, especially with the help of Eggman, you have now fashioned the last of the parachutes around the humans. You, of course, have set up your own, and he has established his own. Only Elbio remains.
And Kent.
And Kent. Only Elbio and Kent remain. Let's cut to Gru.
Okay. So you said Harlequinius is falling towards me very quickly.
Yahoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo! But now safely. He's not going to... Him and the people might take some damage, but he's holding him.
I'm assuming that we are going to come very close to each other at some point, so I'm going to place a lot of faith in your hands. Grumma unzips her suit ever so slightly and removes what seems to be a reasonably sized tube, like one of those like poster shipping tubes you'd get in the mail, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And she hands it off midair to Harlequinius.
To a tentacle.
To a tentacle. And says, my dear, just open the lid and aim properly.
Anything more specific you want, Grumma? You said you are going to give me faith and put it into my hands. But just so you know, if I don't have more info, I'm not sure I'm going to do exactly what you want.
Aim towards Etrigal, and the spirit shall know what to do when it nears him.
That is much clearer than your initial instruction.
You were saying very this well. As we're both like holding onto the tube, like passing each other by. And I say, all right, you let go. And I assume accelerate ahead of her since I am going faster.
And you hit the trees hard. All three of you get stuck in different parts of the tree and are each kind of bruised up, but you still are holding that. Now, this is where your 8 comes in. You are bruised up, which is going to be 2 physical.
Great. I'm going to take it as damage.
Okay. You're about 20 feet off the ground. You're a bit of a climb down. You did like smash through several layers of branches, but you are near the ground. As you look around, you can see a little tube of pink disappearing behind a tree. You each are 2 in. You've escaped, though. You have effectively escaped, and there's nothing else you're going to do with the ship.
Yeah.
So I am going to rejoin the ship before continuing the scene,
because
that looks pretty imminent. Kent, you, well, your mount is by the padding. Is there enough fabric for Elbio, Sylvia?
I mean, of course, I'm going to say, of course there is.
What kind of a question is that?
Yeah.
I feel like Dean's throwing us into that one parachute, 2 people problem.
I will give mine to Elbio. I will ask the little critters to catch me. We're less than 50 feet from the trees. I have the egg. I'll tie my parachute onto Elbio and I'll jump off. I don't care. Try and stop me.
All right.
Fucking love you.
You drop through that hole.
Sure. I say, please catch me. I'm trusting you guys.
All right. And Elbio with a parachute that's small for him, but we know Elbio's weight can fluctuate as it has to be able to ride this ship to begin with. Elbio leaps off the edge, followed by several of the soldiers who are still remaining. Warden, you have now a full round. You are the last one. What is your final action? It is headed in the right direction. You don't necessarily need to steer. It's going to come, it's going to slam right into those thousands and thousands of cute creatures.
Okay, and everyone else is off the ship now.
They are all leaping off. We're seeing, it's very much like the intro to an anime. You see all these Wistian soldiers in their like cool outfits. We haven't really described them, but this is a fabric culture, right? So they have really elaborate fabrics and patterns. You have an idea, Mo, you were going to say, or you're just getting excited?
I have an idea that would just probably usurp anything you have to say because it's such a stark mental image.
All right, Dean, you can cut from here. All right, what's your idea?
The Swiss Guard outfits from the Vatican.
Swiss Guard.
Fun historical fact, everyone. The Swiss Guard outfits that are currently worn by the Swiss Guard who walk about Vatican City were designed by Michelangelo. And the design has not changed since Michelangelo first designed them.
And I, of course, know exactly what a Swiss Guard outfit looks like. But for our viewers at home, if you could describe it for their dumb sakes.
Yeah, for the 3% of you that aren't based out of Vatican City.
Imagine, if you will, a striped motley of yellow and blue with these Renaissance collars
Big
about poofy, the necks.
Big poofy ruffle collars.
Conquistador-esque helmets with massive plumes of red feathers atop them.
Big feathers.
And, of course, white gloves and several medallions upon your chest to adorn whatever achievements you have created for yourself.
They look like
these
little,
are real and they are currently used.
They look like little toys.
And obviously, every time I've mentioned the soldiers, this has been what I've been describing.
Oh.
If you were thinking of anything else, you're the fool. Obviously, they've always been super colorful. It is very contemporaneous with the Culverin and whatnot.
Conquistador
helmets.
We put a photo for every Patreon episode we release, and I do think that that is the perfect photo for the Patreon.
Save that one specifically.
I will.
Yeah, join us on Bits After Crits to see that photo. Yeah, this is what we see. From the perspective of the cute creatures, we see this flaming disc falling, and off the side, these beautiful men, women, non-binary soldiers clad in a blue and gold motley, leaping up and catching in the sky and drifting. Now, as each of them goes up, a cluster of these little red-orange critters targets them, chitter at each other, and go off in the direction that they're drifting in.
Ah, to go presumably meet them.
To meet them as they fall so they don't take the same damage you did.
Yeah.
To meet them as they fall, to catch each of them. And they're spreading out, and then we see the form of Elbio leap off.
Can I say the parachute's tied to his, like, little nose horn? So it's this massive thing going ass first, but so delicately falling. I think he falls slower than all of them.
He's swaying back and
forth. It's some fucking Heffalumps and Hoozles shit. It's just weighted at the bottom with a tiny little knot pulling up the parachute.
And hundreds of these critters are moving back and forth on the ground, trying to position themselves beneath the Elbio.
It's like in Bee Movie when they have to land the plane and all of the bees are forming the different shapes of a flower to try to help the plane land. The giant, giant, massive thing floating down with tiny little creatures trying to assist.
See, I was going to say it's like the off-brand ripoff of A Bug's Life entitled Ants, in which they're forming a massive wrecking ball and they have to arrange themselves into a wrecking ball position.
Tune into our Patreon subscription for my history on the Ants versus Bugs Life Chronicles, because that is actually a crazy little piece of animation history.
Oh, I can't wait.
So, Dean.
Yes.
Now that I've plugged Patreon 3 times in 2 sentences, what would we like to do?
So how far away would you say I am? Because if I've seen once I see LBO jump and I notice everyone is gone, Sylvie is gone, I think Kent takes a moment to take a sigh that he's saved everybody, and he has a contemplation of, can I get out of this? And he looks to his chest, and he realizes he does have a size XL Danny Eggman apron on.
The merch! The merch!
Yes!
The merch!
And he's a top subscriber.
Oh, absolutely.
Kent so is a top subscriber to Danny Eggman.
Yeah.
Kent is a bottom subscriber. And I think this will be verified.
Kent has never been anally penetrated in his entire life. I'm so sorry for railroading like that, but
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So Sylvia can't have a strap on. Thanks for writing my character for me.
That is exactly what was in my head as well. Come on.
You know, I think all of our thoughts are indicative of our personalities because my thought was that Kent was a proud asexual man.
Yeah, I'm the one who's like, yeah, of course he's getting pegged every day.
I'm the one who's like, he dumb, he top.
Oh, God.
Of course, all four of us have spoken at length about this character except for the actual player.
Yeah, Kent, can we get a little reading on that real quick?
On his, what he identifies as?
Is he a top or a bottom? Mm-hmm. We need to know.
He's a...
Drum roll, please.
I will say, Kent is definitely a top, but he's a benevolent top.
Doesn't exist, but I was right.
No. It is now canon, both in our world and the world itself. Benevolent top. Remember it.
Like a soft dom.
Do I identify as a malevolent bottom then? Is that the binary we've been looking for this entire time?
What about an ambiguous verse?
Well, I was going to say true neutral verse.
True neutral verse.
Yeah, or chaotic verse. Jamie Green shout out again.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
More and more. All right. I'm glad you lift that up. And it has a cartoon kawaii image of Danny Eggman on it. And it says Egg King, I believe.
Yes, it does.
Incredible. So you lift it up over your head as a one-man parachute.
As a one-man parachute with Halbert in the other hand, jumping to where I think I could spot Edrigal. I'm going to jump out, and hopefully if I can see him, I'm going to plummet Trident Prong first at that motherfucker.
Okay. So we've traveled. It's been, two rounds since you guys leapt out.
Mm-hmm.
So we've traveled a little bit sideways for sure, but I'll give you that you can leap off and see Gru, who's not yet descended, off in the distance. And you have a sense that Gru is going after Edrigal. So yeah, you do leap off as well. And you are plunging toward the ground. Sylvia, you leapt from the bottom.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Imagine again from these cute critters' point of view. A lot of them have spread off into the different directions to catch all the different people. Some are heading towards Kent right now even because he's still close enough. But a lot of them are still looking up at this flaming thing that is coming down sideways and down over the trees as you, Sylvia, leap out, arms outstretched, and they catch you. You crowd surf over the tiny claws of these beautiful little critters, and did I ever have a noise for them? Oh my God.
You did at one point, and I forget what it was.
Me too.
As you search, I want to describe the mental image I have, because we initially mentioned they look a little bit like Squovitz, the squirrel Pokemon.
The new squirrel Pokemon from Pokemon Sword and Shield.
And all I'm thinking about is thousands of them, and you can see the reflection of the fire in their eyes.
Oh, yes.
In their big, big black eyes.
In their big eyes.
Yes. And you are passed from one to the other so quickly, crowd surfing out. And what are the noises? Well, whatever their noise was originally, there's going to be a new noise, the noise that they make. Because these things, they're not all Pokemans. They have different noises they make.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're passing you, they're going, She-Ra, 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 She-Ra. And you are hurtling at incredible speed across the rooftops, past from one to one to one to one. And so many of them are still looking up at this disc of wood that is plummeting, now starting to snap, crack,
and pop.
And pop the tops of the trees. And this is where your original eight comes in. They do as you said, and many of them leap into this thing.
Oh, no.
To see if anyone else is there. Many of them pour up onto it, and they pour off the trees onto it as it crashes through the last trees and straight towards a big barren hillside. And we see, the last thing we see is one of them pokes its head up from the side of the ship, and it very excitedly has a Danny Eggman bobblehead in hand that it rescued before the wood smashes into the hill and the gunpowder that was there for the culverine goes off in a massive
spirit incinerating explosion.
Oh.
You know, that's all, folks.
Well, they're spirits, so, you know.
Well, he said spirit.
He said spirit incinerating.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very clear with that choice of language.
Yeah. So Sylvia just canonically drowns herself, and that's it for me.
But Sylvia is now being gathered up on by many of these creatures
Can
that
you
are all
tell
chanting.
Me, is the one with the crossbow bolt, is he alive?
Just give her that.
Yes. He is alive, and he greets you as you are placed down safely on the ground, and you're surrounded by a semicircle of these creatures that are loving you and worshiping you and shouting, "Shira, Shira." He goes up to you, and he places his little claws together, and he does a deep bow, a bow so deep that the crossbow bolt penetrating his belly brushes against the ground.
Okay, I pull out the egg that I promised them, and I hand the little crossbow bolt guy the egg, and then I would like to pull the crossbow bolt out of his stomach, because it just seems like a bad time.
As you tug, you can see that there's kind of twisted scar tissue around the front that's holding it in, and he's letting you do it, but you can tell he's uncomfortable when you tug. You know that if you use your healing abilities, you might get that scar to open up and let this thing come out.
Is it a new scene?
I think we're in a new scene. We said once you crash, we are now in a new scene. Okay. I know we're kind of continuous thing, but now we're all on the ground. Rounds are over. We're beginning a new scene with, you know, Sylvia's down there, and then we're going to catch up with the other three. You can indeed heal if you would so choose.
Great. So she puts the blue spirit egg in the little guy's hand, and then she kneels down. She puts both her hands on the crossbow bolt, and the beds of her nails start leaking, which at first looks like the bioluminescent plague juice, but it's like pearlescent. Her eyes start leaking bioluminescent pearl juice. Her hair starts changing from the roots from white to brown, and she looks perfectly human. Every ounce of ethereal grace she had is gone for a moment, and she is clearly in extreme pain. But as she does this, the scar tissue loosens up, the milky, pearlescent, shiny rainbow fluid drips from her eyes, her nose, her fingernail beds, and she takes an additional -1 to physique in order to heal the wound of the crossbow bolt. So I now have a -2 in physique, I guess, just until Dean says I don't.
I'm tearing up from the beauty of that description.
All three of us have jaws on the floor for that.
What was your original debility to?
I took an additional -1 to physique. I'm not sure how long debilities last, or...
They would, debilities heal, not end of scene, but end of act.
Okay, then I have an additional... Cool.
So part of that is when you touch someone and make a demand of them, if they do what you ask. So there's that element to it. I suppose if you don't want to come up with something new, that could mechanically be the fact that you made a demand of him before and they did do what you ask. But you have an option now to request something of both this leader and his crew.
I would like to ask if they can at least help me get back to the party, since I'm the only one not near them. So...
Mm-hmm. Yes, you are invited to sit cross-legged, and dozens of them hold you up and climb up trees and bring you around and around and around. It feels like a little magic carpet ride.
We love a swarm mount. We love a swarm mount.
And you are being brought back towards the party, as well as several of the soldiers who have fallen and are now being rescued. As you're going away, he commanded them to do that, and he's there orchestrating, making sure everyone's safe. You catch out of your eye, as he is meditating upon the blue egg in his hands, you see the descent of the parachute of one Danny Eggman quite close by.
Oh, no. A glare in the distance.
Let's see what happens. But we're going to cut to the rest of the party. Nick.
I saw Edrigal go behind a tree.
You did.
Do you think, do I have a good shot at him?
You saw him disappear into the woods. Not like immediately hide behind a tree, but like disappear behind a tree, deeper, deeper, deeper.
Gru, do I need to be able to see him to open the tube?
As long as you can get it close enough, dearie, the contents shall know what to do.
Yeah, but like, is it like a gun situation? Like, should I be able to see him? Or is it just a general direction? I can't see him. Should I open the tube or not? I'm really worried about not doing what you ask.
As long as you have a general trajectory and you succeed fairly well in being able to aim in the general trajectory, then the contents of the tube shall go forth and meet the directive.
Great, the puss is going to open this goddamn tube. Do I need to roll for that?
I have no idea what is in this tube. So
Kent just blew by this conversation.
Yes, Kent did fly by this conversation. And he, yes, yeah, Kent
yeah, he's in a blind rage also. Jeez.
And
yeah.
He was moving rapidly because he has the smallest thing and the blade. Mm-hmm. So I think he flies by in that direction towards mm-hmm. where Edrigal was, and he absolutely pulled deep in the dirt just in that direction. Now, you could open the tube, but just know that Kent is also unseen behind the trees by that person.
Hey, Gru! Thank God I noticed this, but Kent is kind of in the line of fire. Again, no idea what's going to happen here, but is this a bad idea now to open the tube?
You are still in the tree, or you have climbed down to the ground at this point?
If we're cutting off from where we left off, I didn't do anything movement-wise before.
Okay, you're still perched in a tree.
Yeah.
Okay. Kent, I think you did fly by this conversation and kind of heard it, so you could theoretically act accordingly. I want to cut to you now, because you did fly farthest ahead.
Want an answer from Gru.
Unless Gru wants him to open the tube.
That's the big thing I want to know.
Gru is okay with him opening the tube. It's dependent on his role, though, because he's, from our last episode, it's obvious this will be a finesse role, given how you made Kent do a finesse role with the similar situation.
Aiming.
Yes.
But he can't see. Like, it's physically, like, to clarify his situation, he is looking at a forest.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that there's a lot of thick trees there.
I saw something pink in the distance once.
Yeah, there's trees between him and Edrigal and Kent.
The contents of the tube do not need sight lines. They only need to be able to smell.
I feel like, at this point, if I don't open this tube, it's going to be fucking blue balls. So I really feel like, for our listeners' sake, I should just open this goddamn tube.
Open the freaking tube.
As a matter of fact, fuck it. I'm going to open the tube with a finesse roll. Is that cool with everybody?
Yeah, that's
Please.
Cool. With...
Okay, now wait.
I'm sorry, Kent. I'm sorry if this destroys you.
Yeah, it's Maureen's fault. Anyway, I have one last question. Since we don't really do camp narratively, when does luck reset? Is it a scene or act thing? I think that's your call, Dean, but I feel like it should be one of those and not camp.
Should have one left.
Yeah, he has one left. It would be either the end of act or a period of rest.
Great.
Like, yeah, if we were to get a full night's sleep, you'd be fine.
Great, okay. So I'll keep that up with act. That makes sense. Yeah. All right, I'm going to roll. I don't really want to use my last luck, so I might not. It's an eight.
Okay. I need some information of what this is to describe it. So what's your idea here?
In this tube, see, I wanted this to be a surprise for Dean because this is something he requested before episode one.
What?
Yes. May I narrate to a certain degree?
I think you can narrate to a certain degree.
Okay.
Just know. Well, what?
I was going to say, you know, in cartoons when a character describes, it'll be simple. You do this, into this, into this. Where they have the little, like, chibi versions of themselves doing, like,
yes.
go from here to
Oh,
here,
it's ding, Mission
ding,
Impossible.
Ding, ding, ding. So we have in Gru's head what will happen, and then we have the qualified version of it that Dean can narrate.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because my thought is to cut forward to Kent and then to let the thing happen there. So tell me, what is the thing that happens?
So the thing that is in this tube, Harlequinius opens it up, and with this blinding speed, this very long-bodied white object shoots out, acting like a bazooka gun, shooting straight out. If you were to zoom in on this thing, you would see that it has the face of a cat, and it has its mouth open in this absolutely vicious look, and it is aiming towards where Etrigal is in these trees. And its goal, and I will let you decide if it reaches this goal or not, is to get King in its mouth.
It's a long cat. It's a long cat.
It's a long ass cat.
A long cat.
It's kind of like a net.
Okay, it's a long cat.
Dean, another cat.
I have given you the long cat.
I love this. And it's like a bullet that flies like a Chinese dragon.
Yes.
Okay.
Can you just give me feet? How long is this long cat at this moment?
As at it least 10 feet.
Great.
Yes. It has been stored up.
Yeah. When you, it's like springed up in the tube. When you fire it from the tube, it kind of keeps coming out for a few seconds where you're like, is there? Whoa.
It's like one of those snake things, you know, the classic toys where you open up the canister and a snake pops out.
Yeah. The jar of peanuts.
Yeah. And the, for all the studio Ghibli lovers, it has that same image as Haku in his dragon form going out of the bathhouse, bursting through the floorboards.
Oh, yeah. And Kent, you hear the noise coming from behind you. Da, 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 da.
I knew it. This is what I said when you gave him another cat.
Is that all you wanted my long cat for?
No, that's not what I wanted your long cat for. Okay. I just thought of that now. I'll insert music here for the first time ever in Bits Before Crits history.
And for our listeners, that is in fact a piece of music from Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cats the Musical.
Yeah, hello, police. Several weeks ago, I asked you to come and arrest Dean Beckwith for making several Cats references in the episode. I would like you to be informed that nobody ever came and justice has not been served, and he's still doing it. So yeah, if you could get over here, that would be nice. This is Nick.
Can I do anything before this cat does its thing?
Yes, yes. Well, you land and, yeah, into the dirt, and you hear the thing coming behind you.
Can I just shout? Can I say a little something for this little spirit?
You can do your shout, yeah.
Okay. And I don't know, maybe if it boosts the spirit in any way and aids it, it'd be a benefit to us all. I shout at it, "Go, Vexen! Go, dearie! Get him back for us!"
Damn, I was going to call him Mistopheles, but we...
Surname.
Vexen Mistopheles. Okay, great. Yeah, he's a long name.
Long name for a long
Kent,
cat.
You can narrate. We're going to do you for the next like 9.5 minutes straight because fuck these people. All right, Kent, what would you like to do?
Firstly, I want to know if this impact had, because I want to make sure that I'm balanced. Did I take any damage from this impact?
Yeah, you should have.
Not that Kent is concerned about that. His concern was getting everybody to safety. And now his new concern is to eliminate the threat.
Yeah, I think with your armor, you probably are similar to Arlequilinius with two people. So he took 2 damage upon landing. So you'll take 2.
Okay. And because I still had the 1 padded piece, it would just be 1. Because I'm not in my full plate.
Yeah. That's a discussion for another time, is whether plate mail makes it better or worse when you fall.
Yeah, I was going to say falling damage is probably different, but...
but, yeah.
But I'll take the two.
Do it with the padded. So that's 1 total. You have landed, and I think, though you can't see Edrigal, your warden senses may give you a sense of the direction he's in.
I am going to use my ability that I haven't used since episode 2, I think, of I am the law, and I'm going to say, "In the name of the Warden of Braith, you will show yourself, you wretched, phallic, abysmal creature, and you will stand and face judgment."
My man used the phallic word. He called him a phallic.
I'm invoking my I am the law, where if I give an NPC an order, which I'm demanding him to show himself, I roll plus moxie. And on a hit, they will come to attack me. They will back away and flee or do what I say. On a 10 plus, I will get plus 1 forward. But if I fail this roll, they'll do what they want and I'll take a minus 1 forward against him.
It's such a good roll.
That's really good.
And honestly, wherever this goes, it just goes with the fact that Kent has been on. This is just pure emotion. So let's see what happens.
I like, yeah, yeah.
That is a 7. On so a, I don't it, get the plus forward. So you you're going to,
yeah.
I don't get the plus 1. What I do get is he will do one of the options, which for you, Dean, is he'll attack me, back away and flee, or do what I say, which was to reveal himself. I want to say for flavor, Kent's got a head wound bleeding off the side of his face as he's screaming this.
I mean, I know what I want to do, but it's a no but. In this situation, there's situations where it might be good. Let's say you're saying you shall not pass, then back away cautiously, then flee is hilarious when the fucking Balrog runs away. But in this case, he's already fleeing, so that can't be the case.
Yeah, that's true.
That just can't be the case.
I do love a tasty warden. You see, now how he got up there. You're not sure how they move at all. There's no feet. It's a tube. It doesn't wriggle.
It's like a fat snake.
Mm-hmm. A snake. Yeah, that's it. And it's like a snake, a little bit coiled up in a tree. You're not sure how he got there. You just noticed him now. And he says, King, take him down. And you see a small wren flying towards you. You know, you recognize this as Gru's Wren King. Would you like to do anything?
I want to try to see if I can charge towards him. Is he high up in a tree, or is he like if I were to jump and with my halberd swing hit him?
You are referring to the worm, not the king, right?
Okay, yeah, let's use the name, Edrigal.
Edrigal is
15 feet up in a tree, so he's a little out of halberd use. I will say, Kent, it's not a thick tree.
Also, Kent supposedly heard a little bit of our conversation from
Kent
before.
Kent heard your conversation.
Did he hear my shout?
I think he heard the shout. He can act with that knowledge. I'm hoping for some kind of coordinated move here, really, honestly. I'm trying to set up.
What I want to have happen is I want to charge towards the tree to chop it down to knock Edrigal off, but I will brace for whatever impact is coming from King to just sort of grit my teeth and take the hit and go forward, knowing that King will be at least grabbed. And if I have to take a hit, it's a small price to pay to take out Edrigal.
Okay, this is a physique charge rule, and I'm going to say because of the context, your option is to do double damage. You will take damage. You can't avoid damage if you get a critical.
That's fine. That is a 10.
Hey!
Double damage.
And we've got the sexy, like, sleeveless action going on right now, right?
Blood, oh, yeah, his look is like, he's like a buff young Abe Lincoln with his like nice mutton chops and chin strap beard just going to kill this fucker with an axe.
I'm sorry, Maureen just laughed at the words buff young Abe Lincoln.
So one aspect I think I just want to highlight real quick is Nick mentioned very early on in like episode one or episode two, after crits, that every episode your character seems to grow an inch. And we haven't asked about his height for a while. I know, I know you didn't mean that way, but I love the idea that between episode one and episode seven, he's like, yeah, he's Abe Lincoln's height. He's 6'6".
He's not Abe Lincoln's height. I'm just saying the facial features, mm-hmm. and just I just see like he's 5'10". That's it.
5'10"?
5'10"!
Michael, you motherfucker.
I thought it was 5'9", 5'10". I kept walking.
No, it was 5'8", 5'9". It was 5'7", 5'8". At one point, yeah. It was 5'8".
Was
it?
It was 5'7".
Yeah.
5'6". I might have said. That was my original pitch.
All right. We pitched 5'5", and then we gave you 5'7", 5'8". And now you know what? You go, he's 5'10".
Fuck it.
Easy peasy.
Fuck it. 5'8", 5'8". That's my fault. I didn't remember. 5'8". He's 5'8". He's a stout guy, and he's charging. He's going to take the impact from this godbird and try to chop down the tree. Not really thinking about whether he feels like a 5'10", but he knows he's a 5'8".
That's still not even that short. Well, you're lucky. I'm saying you're lucky because King is flying your way straight towards your forehead. This is for the kill. The weight of 1,000 pounds. Driven directly towards your forehead, the thing in the center. What's that thing that we think through? What's the part of the brain that you lobotomize?
I mean, I was going to say frontal lobe at first.
Frontal lobe. The point is, this thing is coming towards your unarmored head to destroy your brain tissue. If you had been 5'10", you'd be gone.
You'd be a dead man.
You'd be a dead man.
You'd be 5 dead.
But, 5 foot dead.
But instead, just as it's about to make contact, you hear Vexen Mistopheles whistling his way through the woods, and there is just a flash of white fur, and then that flash of white fur continues for several seconds.
Mm-hmm. It's like a train.
Like a train. As you're slow motion running in this direction, and then it's gone, and the wren is gone as well. And you were just fixated on moving forward, so this doesn't faze you. You were expecting to get hit. You didn't get hit at all. And you swing that halberd,
And you hear a, and the halberd comes through the side of the tree a little bit diagonally. Beautiful blade. Oh, these are gorgeous blades. We love them, don't we? We love the sharp blade as it pierces diagonally. And for a moment, it appears as though the tree is still standing up straight.
Oh, it's that moment. It's that, him,
that anime thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then it grinds sideways
and
falls over.
I'm rock hard.
Grinds sideways.
Well, it always does the thing where
that like a sharp diagonal.
Yeah.
And Edrigal falls tangled in the branches at your feet.
I was erect and now you've knocked me down.
Kill him!
I'm going to ignore that as I knock you out, and I'm going to take one fist and punch him with all of my strength and frustration and knock him out.
Do you have your gauntlet on, or is it just a fist at this point?
Oh, no, it's just bare fist. He didn't have time to put most of the armor on.
Yeah, you punch the eyes. They grow huge and wide, and then as the fist comes in, they shrink back to human size as you punch that pronounced ridge of a forehead, and Edrigal goes unconscious. Well, I think this is the time at which you hear the rustling of She-Ra, 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 She-Ra. And Sylvia, cross-legged, arrives in the glen. The two of you can be close behind if you so desire.
Yeah, Harlequinius is crawling out of the bushes.
Carl! Damien! Y'all good?
I'm okay.
I think that was Carl. Damien?
Yeah, I'm good too.
All right, cool. We'll talk later.
I'm pretty sure everyone should be fine.
Kent sees all of them. He's bloodied. He's covered in sweat and dirt. He points to Edrigal, gives them a thumbs up, and sort of just drops onto his back like those shonen anime protagonists after a hard-fought battle and just takes a big exhale.
I'm starving.
Yes.
Gru stands straight with her arms outstretched as this thoroughly tubular cat returns, and you know cats curl up in that little crescent shape when they're really comfortable, but this cat has to wind itself several times into a coil as it rests in her arms. As it sits there with a look of ease on its face, all of a sudden you see and hear that all too familiar for any of you cat owners out there, that sound of an impending hairball. And out from its massive maw comes a saliva-coated king who is a bit disoriented.
Mm-hmm. And he looks up at you with his big black dead eyes. And for what expression can be on a wren's face, he's got a look of, it's not so much he's sorry, but he's a little embarrassed. He thought he could have been the bigger man in this situation, and he kind of fucked up.
Gru looks back, an expression that no one has really seen on her face before, pure and absolute love and adoration, and also massive relief. The blood that was pooled in her wrinkles before has since been dried up, and it starts to flake off ever so slightly as she smiles, this massive smile.
And the wren flaps up twice, and King pecks you quite literally on your front tooth in a weird bird kiss.
Gru is blushing.
Anyone else have anything they want to do to wrap up?
I would like to thank the spirits, the little tanuki egg lovers that got me here. Can I see Danny Eggman?
Oh, no. You do. Yeah, I think so. The four of you, let me ask you, how do you want to restrain and or move Edrigal? You're basically being pointed to the next glen over where all the people, the survivors from the crash are. How do you want to bring him along?
Are we bringing him along, or are we just kind of putting him in a restraining situation?
I think that's up to you, Warden Buddy.
It's nighttime, so we should sleep.
Yeah. We should sleep, but we're really deferring to you because this thing is fucked up and none of us have really the skills to deal with it. You don't have to move him. I mean, Kent, you could conceivably circle of protection right here.
I think I will do that with LBO and take the extra time to make certain that this will keep him pinned, because I'm hoping that because he's so incapacitated that I have an easier time making sure that he stays pinned.
I'll give you a plus one to it, but you do have to roll because it is a move.
That's true.
That's fair. That's fair. I just was hoping that because narratively he's been knocked unconscious and is pinned under trees and debris, that hopefully that it would help.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, come on. Come on. Final roll of the app. Final roll of the app. Oh.
That is a 9, which means it will work temporarily, not permanently.
Yeah, yeah. So I think given the circumstances, you're never sure how strong your ward is going to be until you cast it. But now that you've cast it, you're confident it's going to last at least until morning. So you have time to figure it out again or to redo it, you know. Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure there was some understanding of how he'd been secured. Mm-hmm. As you move into the next glade, Sylvia, you see seated across from each other on two stumps, Danny Eggman and the little Tanuki chattering back and forth in what seems to be the Tanuki's language.
Mm-hmm. Of course it is.
And, I guess you can speak Tanuki. Yeah. Fuck yeah. Okay, you can speak all these spirit languages.
You know,
what?
There's something I've been wondering, because we established that the fate of a warden in the next life is basically to be a mount for another warden. Were all of these creatures in past lives part of Danny Eggman's long ancestral line of lovers?
Danny Eggman is a Tanuki. He's always been a Tanuki.
Oh, the answer's been right in front of us all along.
Yeah, so only Sylvia hears this. But you come upon these two chatting with each other, negotiating something on the two stumps.
Hey, Jimmy, me boy, you don't know what you've got your hands on here. This thing's real big. This is one of the rarest of the rare, Danny boy.
Oh, Papa Eggman, I sure always did love to take your advice. But I gotta tell you, there was a lot of eggs cracked. Oh, there were a lot of eggs cracked. But I did nary cry. I did nary cry.
And the very last image of the episode is we zoom in on the big cheeks of the little Tanuki, and he smiles.
You're done right, Danny boy.
And there's a little gleam in his eye, and then cut to black.
I thought he just didn't cry because he was a sociopath, but turns out.
He only cries over material things. He doesn't cry over, for instance, both of these individuals, the entire family, they're sociopathic. They've bred any empathy out of the Eggman family line.
Oh, God.
So what they're having this conversation about the good egg that the Eggman line has acquired instead of the fact that hundreds of their relatives have been permanently incinerated, torn from their second life and driven to whatever place is after or the nowhere. So
that, I guess I feel a little better about that now, knowing they might have been cute, but they had no empathy.
Yeah.
They just did it for the eggs. this is after crit stuff anyway. Sorry.
Yeah, this is top tier though. All right. Please join us on After Crits, where it gets better over the course of the season, folks, because we just keep pulling the threads together, discussing what's been happening, discussing what's going to happen. And I highly recommend you check it out. The ideal way to listen to bits before is to listen to bits after. There's a few ideas in this that had shown up in previous After Crits, and it was so nice to hook them in. Anyway, you can find that on patreon.com/bitsbeforecrits. Subscribe to us at $5 tier or above, and you can join us there. Until next time, I'll be the one to say it this time. Nobody else even try. Goodbye, eggs.
Eggs.
No.
I listened.
Yeah.
Dean will remember this.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dean, you can say it.
Eggs.
Not long ago, this phenomenal cat produced 7 kittens right out of a hat.